Welcome to This Week in Debian, the podcast that brings you the latest news and interviews inside the Debian community. Brought to you by FrostbiteSystems.com, providing desktops and notebooks pre-installed with Debian. Every purchase from Frostbite Systems, a portion of the proceeds will be donated back to Debian and help support this great project. So stop on by FrostbiteSystems.com and get your Frostbox today.
Welcome to Wista. $1.25, please.
Hey, it's Toe Booth Willie. Haven't seen you in a long time. How's it going, man?
Good. Thanks for asking, pup.
Hey, Willie, the last time I talked to you, you said you were installing Fedora on your computer. How's that working out for you?
Hey, can't complain, pal. How's by you?
Oh, it's going good. Dude, I just installed Debian. It is wicked fast and stable.
So where you headed?
Oh, I'm going to the Northeast GNU Linux Fest.
By the way, what is this for?
Well, it's a conference for all GNU Linux users and open source software. There's going to be a keynote speaker. His name is Matt Lee. He's from the Free Software Foundation. He's going to be speaking on free software. And there's also going to be exhibitors there from like GNOME, KDE, and other open source projects where you can talk to them about the various things that they're doing within the project. And it's just going to be a great place to hang out with other GNU Linux users and geek out. Oh, by the way, Willie, the conference is at Worcester State University at 486 Chandler Street. Do you know how to get there?
Well, I know my way around New England, I can tell you that much.
Well, I guess I can just check out the directions on northeastlinuxfest.org. I know they have them there.
Okay, sure.
Oh, hey, Willie, how much is it for the toll?
The state charge is $1.25, pal.
Man, $1.25? That's more than my operating system costs. Well, here you go.
Would you like a receipt with that?
Yeah, sure, I'll take one. Thanks.
And here you are.
Well, we'll see you later, Willie. Have a good day.
Hey!
Oh, what? Willie, you want to come with us to the GNU Linux Fest? Come on, man, get out of there. Hop in the car. We'll take off and go and have a great time.
I'm coming out of the booth!
That's right. So if you want to join us and Toe Booth Willie at the Northeast GNU Linux Fest, it's going to be in Worcester, Massachusetts, at Worcester State University, located at 486 Chandler Street in the Student Center. It's going to be on April 2nd, starting at 10:30 a.m., going until 3 p.m. There's also going to be an after party at Jillian's, so come on down and have a great time. Visit us at northeastlinuxfest.org, and please, if you plan on coming, register so that way we know who to expect and who's coming. Again, visit us at the website, northeastlinuxfest.org. We hope to see you soon. Hello and welcome to this episode of This Week in Debian. Today we've got an exciting episode for you. We are speaking with someone that you may have heard of, but he may sound a little bit different to you because he's not traveling at 75 miles an hour and he's not in his portable studio. That's right, I'm talking about Dave Yates from the Lotta Linux Links podcast. Dave, thanks for joining us today.
I'm blushing. It's good to be here.
Dave, it's a pleasure of mine to have you on. I think this is going to be an awesome interview. I've been looking forward to it. So, Dave, anyone that's listened to your podcast already knows you're a devout Debian user, and you've always been using Debian since the dawn of time, basically. And if no one does know, they need to go to lottalinuxlinks.com and download your Ogcast and start listening to it. And they have about 130 episodes to catch up with, so I highly recommend listening to Dave. He has a great podcast. He always goes over things that he's doing in his life with computers, and I always find it interesting, with whether it's stuff with servers or websites or just neat little tricks that he finds or different desktop environments that he's using. It's definitely worth listening to, even though Dave thinks otherwise.
Yeah, if you have to listen to my podcast, just listen to one episode. And that's the one about I guess the most recent one I did about Debian and why people should use it. That's the only one I'm really proud of.
Yeah, I think that was like around 120 something. I don't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Early 20s, early 120s, I think. So So, Dave, before we get too deep into the interview, then, so how did you first get involved into Linux?
I guess it was between, I would say between 94 and 95. My brother is in the IT industry. He writes hardware drivers, mainly for Windows. But he at the time was a beta tester for Microsoft. And he had more or less, you know, free copies to distribute or to install on multiple machines to try out the latest, you know, beta of Windows NT or beta, you know, beta of Windows 3.11, Windows for Work Groups or whatever. So he was letting me install, you know, the latest beta of Microsoft on my computer. And one day he gave me a book and said, "What do you think of this? You know, try this." I don't think he had ever tried it, but it was a book on, I've already forgotten who wrote it, but it was a Red Hat book. It was like Red Hat 3.9. I can't remember. It was a big book. The Red Hat logo was actually different back then. It was like a walking man with a red hat. But version 3.something, I think. And I installed Red Hat, whatever version it was, alongside of a beta of Windows E. You know, side by side, and wanted to use Linux, but it took me like 6 months to get online. I was a dial-up user, and I evidently had a WIN modem. I think I ended up compiling a kernel in an effort to line. I can't remember if that solved the problem or not, but it was really just something new to try. And for the first 6 months, it was a headache, and it was more or less a paperweight and a time waster, you know, trying to get online. But once I got online, with it, it was like my eyes were opened. Like, this is what I used to enjoy about computers when I first started using it, and when, I guess, the early 90s, when I first started using computers at home with bulletin boards, and there was more freeware. There wasn't as much shareware and nagware, and software wasn't as commercial. It just felt like I had gone back in time a little bit to what I really loved about computers and the internet, which was free software. Free as in, you know, doesn't cost anything. I didn't understand the freedom aspect of it at the time. So I guess it was 94, 90, probably 95 before I actually got online with it, but it could have been 94. I can't remember. But that was Red Hat was my first distribution.
That's pretty cool. So did you ever give Slackware a try? Did you ever try tackling that?
I have installed Slackware that I know of once. I've installed multiple Slackware derived distributions, but I think Slacks and there's another one that's coming to mind. Vector Linux, I think it's
Slackware. Yeah, I think that's Slackware too, yeah.
Yeah, so I've played with Slackware, but I've never run it probably more than a week.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Did you try it back in those days, though, like you're saying, 94, 95?
No. I stuck mainly with Red Hat for a long time because I mainly only had, like, at the time, two computers. But as time went on, I started accumulating more. I don't know if I have 10 or 11 now, but I may have had. I've got less now than I used to. But I ran Red Hat from probably 94, 95 till 98. Hmm. Or so. I think my first web server, which is still in the room that my current web server is, which is my 8-year-old daughter's room, it was a Red Hat Apache install. Oh, but the reason I moved to Debian in 98 or so was I think I had read in one of the release notes for, and I can't remember if it was Fedora Core at this time or it's still Red Hat. I know Red Hat had changed their mind the first time about whether or not they were going to support a desktop. You know, they had a desktop install that you could buy in stores. It was available in Best Buy and places for a little while.
Yeah.
But they said, okay, we're not going to do desktops anymore. We're not going to support that. It's not going to be a Linux Red Hat desktop install, more or less. It was going to do servers. And then they came out with Fedora Core, which did that. But I think I read one of the release notes of a release that they recommended doing a fresh install, and that bugged me. I liked, one thing I liked about RPM at the time was, I guess, one thing I liked about upgrades or new versions of Linux or Red Hat at the time was that you could, it was possible to do an upgrade.
Mm.
And I read in one of the release notes that Red Hat was officially recommending, or Fedora was, I can't remember, that you do a fresh install. And I don't know if this was version 6 or, I don't know, the 6, well, I can't remember much about those, but I just do remember being put off a little bit that they were actually recommending that I reinstall everything.
Mm.
And so I went looking then for something that you could install once and upgrade forever.
Yeah, yeah. And so how did you come across Debian then when you were...
I had heard of Debian. I mean, I guess the main two I'd heard of was... well, I guess there was some Debian envy going on at the time, because I remember... I'm pretty sure I remember... I'm old, so I forget stuff. But I think I remember there being an quote-unquote apt-get for RPM, or at least a Synaptic at the time. It felt sort of kludgy, but I think I had some package manager envy even then.
Mm.
So I was aware of Aptitude, and I was aware of RPM Hell, and Debian, it was partially, I guess, you know, I'd always heard that the grass on that side of the fence was indeed greener, and I thought I'd try it. So I really, on the server, never went back. I started running Debian on my server in 98, and probably still continued to run. I may have just quit Fedora and Red Hat cold turkey then, and I think I ran Debian up until... I guess the first version of Ubuntu came out, and I was running Debian seed on everything, I think, but my web server, which was running stable. But I'm pretty sure I had an NVIDIA graphics card, and it wasn't working in the latest batch of upgrades that came down from seed, and I think I was getting frustrated, and I think that's why it is an immediate gratification kind of person. I think that's why I moved to Ubuntu.
Okay.
Was for hardware support.
Okay.
And I kept Debian on the server, but gradually I think all my machines ended up going to Ubuntu up until just recently, just this year.
Okay.
Well, I've always had Debian on the server, well, not always, since 98 or so. And I guess up until the 6 years ago, whenever the first Ubuntu came out, I was running Debian on everything.
Okay.
And then I started running Ubuntu on everything. But right. That's recently changed.
So, all right, well, before we get too far into that, back to your server, you said you're like in 98, you installed Debian. Do you remember, I know when I first started listening to your podcast, you had Sarge on one of your servers. Now, was Sarge back in 98, or was there something before that?
I can't remember. It was Woody was before Sarge, right? And Potato before Woody?
Yeah, yeah, I think so.
I'm pretty sure I had a Potato installed. I honestly can't remember, Jonathan. I mean,
do you know if that server you're running, like you installed in 98, have you just continually upgraded that server?
Actually, I'm on my third piece of hardware. So first server became a desktop, and when I migrated from Red Hat to Debian, that machine still exists, and it's running Debian today.
Okay.
But not as a server. My second machine was a, you know what, my first server was a PowerPC, maybe?
Mm.
I can't remember. It's either that or the Spark Ultra 2 that somebody gave me. But that was my server for a long time. But now I've got a new Dell Power Edge or something.
Okay. Do you know what, like, the longest running time? How many upgrades have you done, like, with Debian? You went from Sarge to Etch. Did you have that same computer running from Etch to...
Yeah. My Spark Box, I know, went from Woody to Sarge to Etch to...
Lenny?
Yeah, to Lenny.
Man, that right there is crazy impressive that Linux can do that, and, you know, Debian is so stable that it can do that without a hitch. You went from, you know, in Windows terms, you upgraded from 95 to 98 to XP to Vista with no problems.
None. No problems whatsoever.
That is crazy.
The problem I had was installing it on that Spark, because it used, I think, the Silo bootloader instead of Lilo.
Yeah.
And there was some ESP Big Mac driver, there was some driver for the NIC that I knew nothing about, or I think it was the NIC, it could have been something else, but I had to find that, and I had to, you know, the init script or something. I can't remember exactly what I had to do, but it took me a little while to install it, and I think I broke it in a kernel upgrade, actually, once. But my problems had nothing to do with upgrades, and that my problems were few and far. But my problems were ignorance and stupidity. You know, I didn't know about the driver at the time of install, and I did something that no one should do ever, which was I was at the time SSH'd into the box.
Oh yeah, you upgraded it from work, right?
Yeah, I upgraded it from work, deleted the old kernel and rebooted it.
Oh man.
It was just stupid. I got home. I just wanted to leave work right then and there and drive 40 miles home and fix it. But
I believe it.
I got it fixed. My wife can attest that when one of my computers isn't working, I drop everything and fix it.
I guess that's trusting. You upgrade the kernel and said, won't need this again. Delete the old one.
that was back in my more anal retentive days, I guess. But that was bad.
Man, but again, I mean, that's just crazy impressive. Going for four upgrades, no problems, still running. And once squeeze stables, then I'm sure you'll be able to upgrade to that and still, you know, you'll be five versions deep into one install, which is crazy.
One of the coolest things to me about the Debian install process is, and I don't know that I'll be able to, you know, a lot of people know how to do this, I'm sure. It's not magic or anything, but it sure seems like it. And I'm not even sure I can explain it right now in an interview without any notes. But Ken Fallon, who lives in the Netherlands, gave me a server. He gave me this box in his basement or garage or something. And he installed Debian on it for me. And this isn't the Debian install story, but he installed it for me. It gave me a username and password, and I got on there and deleted his user and mirrored everything on my Debian server with that git selections app git option or whatever. I've actually forgotten how I did this, but it was just so easy to have a base install in another country and then duplicate everything about my working server on that machine and have a mirror. It was just like magic.
Yeah, I remember actually you went over it in one of your podcasts, and that's an example of one of the cool things about your podcast. It's like, hey, I was doing this the other day, check it out, and you gave all the steps you did to walk through it. And yeah, I remember that when you did that. That was pretty cool.
If you ever have to do that, I guess that would be the only other one of my podcasts that would be worth listening to. But if you never have to do that, that's probably not even worth listening to that one either.
Oh, man.
Now, my brother, talking about the Debian upgrade process, as long as you do it within a year of the next stable, coming stable, I think you're okay. My brother had a Debian stable installed in his basement. And I think he just used it for this, to serve MP3s on or something. And I don't think he doesn't love Freedom enough to have an OGG server.
But, yeah.
he forgot, you know, the machine was so slow and did what it was supposed to do. He just forgot about it. And I think it had been running, I don't know what version of Debian it was, but it had run so long that, I mean, like 3 or 4 years, that he had already skipped 2 stable releases when decided to upgrade it next, and it didn't work. I mean, it didn't work initially. I think he called me, and I think we got it straightened out eventually, but I don't recommend that. Don't skip stable releases if you can help it. But they come out, you know, far enough apart that you really have no excuse.
Yeah, I interviewed Ben Hutchinson on the kernel team, and just talking with them about their process of what they do to you know, stabilize everything. I mean, I've said it before. Debian, it seems, you know, Debian isn't too worried about, you know, creating the newest flashy desktop program or, you know, doing something totally, you know, not upstream. They're concerned about making the most stable GNU Linux distribution that's available, and they definitely do that.
Oh, yeah. And not just stable. I mean, it's the whole package. Everything about it is just, I don't know, integrated. That's just one of the things that I think that I love about Debian is the standard repos. You know, by themselves are really all you need. And, you know, there's really literally something there for everybody. There's stable, there's testing, there's SID. I mean, and if you're a crazy developer or just a crazy person, I guess there's experimental. But Debian SID is, I run it on my laptop, and I run Debian testing right now on all the other machines in my house except for my three servers. Mm. And my main server, I've got like a backup PowerPC version of it, then I've got the one in the Netherlands, and they all run stable.
Nice. So, well, I guess before we got on the server topic, you mentioned how 6 years ago you were pretty much running all Ubuntu on all of your computers there. So would you want to, like, touch on that, kind of like how that started and how things had gone with that? And then,
yeah, it was a hardware issue thing. I think I really liked the idea of I honestly don't remember if 6 years ago if there was a such thing as aptitude safe upgrade, and if there was, I wasn't sure that I knew about it. Mm. And I didn't know about aptitude list bugs. I didn't know about aptitude, was it list? So I was running Debian SID, and every day at 4:30 Eastern time, when I would get home from work and do my upgrade, I would download all these packages, and it was really, really exciting, you know, running Debian SID. And honestly, for a couple of years, you know, 99.99% of the time, there was no problems running Debian SID. But every once in a while, because I didn't know about list bugs and safe upgrades and stuff like that, I was downloading stuff that had bugs in it, and it would occasionally break my system. Mm. And having, at the time, I guess, a 2-year-old and a 7-year-old, and probably up the 7 years prior to that, I was having less and less time to actually deal with breakage.
Yeah.
I didn't have the free time I used to have. So I think it was a combination of me having a hardware issue on my main computer, running an NVIDIA card, and being enticed by the fact that here was a distribution that was going to take a snapshot of SID, and they were going to release it every 6 months. I thought, well, I can live without. Now, maybe I'm at the point in my life where I don't need daily updates, and an update every 6 months, you know, would be worth it if I could get my hardware, you know, working again. I was waiting for the NVIDIA to catch up the SID kernel or whatever. I was frustrated, so that's why I went to Ubuntu, and Ubuntu foot the bill for me for a while. I think the last 3 or 4 years, maybe at least 2 or 3 years, they've been going in a direction that I don't particularly want to go. I mean, I don't think they've hidden their plans. I don't think they've done anything that they don't want anybody to know. I think they've been very upfront about the direction they want to go, and they want to be profitable, and they want to be, you know, the perfect desktop. They want to be Linux for human beings. They want, you know, they want to do these things that I don't necessarily value. Mm. You know, so the reason I went the Ubuntu way was to scratch an itch and, you know, an immediate gratification,
yeah,
hardware fix, and I guess the enticement of a 6-month SID snapshot. And then, you know, the long-term support versions really didn't, on a desktop, didn't entice me that much. I never moved my server to Ubuntu. I just didn't think that was wise. I've always had Debian stable on it. But, you know, I don't think Ubuntu is a bad distribution. It's just one I don't want to run. And I do think that they seem to be, you know, what I talked about earlier about, you know, when I first started using a personal computer at home and getting on the internet and just seeing all of the free software out there, and then watching that move towards the way of shareware and Nagware and, you know, less and less free. Well, it's the same. I feel like that's starting to happen some in the Linux world, potentially. But, you know, it's not just the lowercase free that's endangered, you know, that's in danger of going away. It's right. The uppercase one, too, now.
Yeah.
The whole idea of having an app store and having free and non-free, with a capital F or lowercase f,
yeah,
sold side by side, or, you know, I don't know. It just rubs me wrong or something.
Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying.
And there's more reasons, but, you know, Debian, it is my perfect distribution. It's hard for me to explain why I went back to Debian, but I just knew it was. I knew I didn't want to be an Ubuntu user anymore, and nothing else fit the bill for me.
Yeah, I was telling you earlier that I was testing out the Vinix distribution, which builds off of Ubuntu. It's the distribution made for visually impaired people and blind people, and I finally got that off my computer because I was done testing this version out, and I put Squeeze on there, and I mean, with a very small, slight adjustment, Debian could be completely accessible out of the box with no one having to devote, you know, a majority of their time to reconstruct something to make it accessible. And
yeah.
And I think that's, you know, an added benefit of, that's the perfect reason why distributions need to stay close to upstream, because everything just worked. When I installed it, I started up Orca, everything was accessible. Orca was already installed by default. I mean, granted, the installer wasn't talking, but I mean, outside of the installer not talking, everything else was perfect. And like I said, that's just a perfect reason of why it's important to stay so close to upstream with all these projects, because, you know, between Debian and Fedora using GNOME or KDE or whatever, they can file bugs, fix bugs, you push it upstream, and then everyone else using upstream GNOME or KDE or whatever benefits from it.
Yeah.
And you know,
I think that just reminded me of something I was probably going to forget to say, is the whole is close to upstream and the vanilla, you know, the vanilla-ness of the packages is something that I value. One of the things I was getting tired of with Ubuntu is undoing changes that I didn't think needed to be made in the first place. Mm. Or that, you know, why go customize something for me? Why not let me take the vanilla ice cream and put what I want on it?
Yeah. Know? Yeah, yeah, definitely. And I, you know, I just can't stress that enough. Like, that's just the importance of staying upstream. That's what, like, Linux and GNU and free software is all about, is collaborative work. Sticking close to upstream, everyone helping everyone else out, standing on the shoulders of giants. And, you know, I guess that's kind of the great thing about Linux, you know, and GNU and Ubuntu is free to do this if they want to, but it just, you know, it's just not the direction I want to go in either myself. And I'd imagine the Debian community, you know, that's why they're in the Debian community, because that's, you know, they probably have those same ideals and passion.
Yeah, and it's, I don't want to use the word real, because it people think that, because I say that Debian is a real community, that I'm saying Ubuntu's not, but what I think what I'm trying to say is, Ubuntu's a true democracy compared to, you know, what Debian is compared to what Ubuntu is. You know, Ubuntu is got in some, you know, they're a community, but in some ways they're not a democracy.
Yeah.
And that's another important thing about Debian, is that it is a democracy.
Yeah, and they're extremely helpful and willing to work with you, and you can get a hold of anyone in Debian and, you know, filing bugs and and contribute as much as you want in documentation. Debian, you know, makes it as easy as possible. They're very transparent about everything they do. And the more I work with them, the more, you know, I figure out that they're an awesome community.
Yeah, and it's, I don't know, everything about Debian to me, and granted, it's because I've been using it a long time, I think it's, everything about it is sane and makes sense. I guess if you were brand new to Linux and Debian was the first distribution you ever used, because it's new, it may not be sane or sensical to you, but I think it is. I mean, it's mature, and everything about it is, I mean, I'm not going to say everything. I'm sure it's got some flaws, but I don't notice them. Yeah. I'm really happy with Debian.
And you're running Sid, so.
Yeah. Sid's great.
I know, and it's funny, too. Some people might get turned off by the way Debian describes their different branches, like, you know, oh, testing, I don't want to run that on my computer, that, you know, that's probably not safe. And I said to Zach, the project leader, when I interviewed him, I was just like, you know, what Debian considers testing, all other distributions consider stable.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's what Ubuntu does with their long-term support release, whatever they call it.
Yeah.
It's a snapshot of testing.
Right.
All the other releases are snapshots of Sid.
Yeah.
You know.
So, yeah, and so what Debian considers unstable, Ubuntu releases every 6 months. So, you know, yeah. it's just funny when some people say, like, oh, man, I don't want to run unstable on my computer. It's probably, you know, probably doesn't work. But, like, so then, you know, you ended up moving back to Debian, and now you're completely a Debian user now, you said, right? Then all of your, what do you have, like 9, 10 computers that,
Yeah, everything's Debian. I've got computers I don't boot up anymore that are Debian. I saturated my network here, and I honestly can't plug up another thing to my network or it just crashes.
Oh, man.
So I actually had to retire a gaming machine and take my Linksys Slug and two Spark boxes, maybe. I think that's what I had to retire. And some of those were from non-freedom loving devices. I mean, I plugged up a PS3 and a DirecTV box and a Wii and a network television. That ate into some of it, I'm sure.
Yeah, that but, didn't help.
Yeah, my big screen TV broke my network's what happened.
So when you install Debian, do you add like the multimedia repo, or do you just stick with the repos that?
I do own. Let's see. I used to do that a lot. I've been tempted to do that on my server because I'm running a Mediatome and PS3 media server on it, but I built all of those multimedia pieces that I've needed from source for that one, just so I could have the latest.
Okay.
And I actually didn't want to do that, just because, and I still feel a little dirty for doing it, just because it doesn't feel like a clean, polished Debian machine anymore. I mean, it is, because I just have to install some stuff from source on it, but I just didn't feel like I should do that on my server. But again, immediate gratification, but I don't make a habit of that. But I think on
now it's tainted.
Yeah, that's what it feels like. No, I've done that before in the past with some computers my daughter's used.
Yeah.
But I don't think that I have it on. No, I don't have it on my laptop, which is my everyday computer, my ThinkPad.
Is that one of the things that you like about Debian is the capital F freedom aspect of the distribution?
Yeah, it feels right. I mean, I'm going to be honest, it's probably not the primary reason, but it's at least, you know, secondary or tertiary. It's in there. It's up there. It's very important to me. You know, the package manager is probably number one on my list. I just, hard for me to enumerate them, I guess. But yeah, it's up there. It's very, the capital F part of it's very important to me. But at the same time, you know, I like how Debian gives you choices. You know, the way they have their free, non-free, and contrib.
Yeah.
repositories. It's sane. It's not. It doesn't feel like a compromise, and they're maintained by Debian.
Right.
And you know, even your non-official repo, like the multimedia repo that you mentioned, you know, most every Debian user knows about that one, and it's really the only, I guess, non-official one that anybody even thinks about using. There's not a multitude, you know, of PPAs out there to taint your system with.
Yeah. Yeah, I think even the multimedia repo has a wiki page on Debian, so...
Yeah, yeah. I've run it before and could still sleep at night, so...
Yeah, I mean, like you said, they offer those other repos. I mean, they're just, you know, it's not as easy, I guess, as adding something in Ubuntu, but it's still easy. You just add it to your sources.list and, you know, update the repo and bam, you're all set. So,
yeah,
you know, it's not impossible, but, you know, they it's still there for you if you need it. So, which I guess that's why the Free Software Foundation doesn't list them on their, you know, on their list, because they don't take out the binary. Well, no, they have the binary Intel drivers out, but... You know, they still have a way for you to get it in there.
Yeah, so it was a binary blob issue, I think, that they didn't like. But
well, I think they also have, like, you know, like we were saying, those repos, they make them available. I think the Free Software Foundation, they don't even want them to, you know, maintain such a thing. So I think that's why they, you know, they won't give them their blessing, if that's how you want to say it. But, yeah, so let's see, what else here? Well, is there anything else that you'd like to mention about Debian? I'm not quite sure what to ask. I mean, I wanted to talk to you about your switch from Ubuntu to Debian, because I heard that podcast you talked about, and I thought it was very interesting. I even wrote a blog about it when it came out. And like I said, I found it interesting that, you know, even I myself was struggling with your thoughts and was thinking the same thing, so that's why I wanted to have you on. And...
Yeah, I struggle sometimes a little bit maybe with not liking Ubuntu. I mean, that's not the reason I left. But you know, it filled a need for me for a little while, and I realized, you know, that it was after 4 or 5 years of it, you know, 6 years total, it just felt wrong, and I knew they were going the direction I didn't want to go. And or that I don't think they should go, honestly. But they didn't disguise that, and they still aren't. And you know, that's great. I do think that they are doing good work, introducing people to Linux. But and I've said this before. I don't know how important it is for me personally to introduce people to Linux. And that may sound weird from a guy that does a Linux podcast, but you know, I love Linux. It's the only operating system I use. But you know, if you don't want to use it, you know, after you've heard about it, that's your mistake.
But oh, go ahead, Dave.
Right, I was just going to say something else ill-planned, and I don't even know what I was going to say, actually, but yeah, just I like Debian.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, definitely. And I, yeah, like you said, it, you know, again, Ubuntu can do whatever they want, and I guess, you know, I appreciate Ubuntu and the work that they've done bringing, you know, Linux to people that may never even heard of it or wanted to try it. I'm thankful for that work and that effort. And, you know, I mean, if it weren't for Ubuntu, I would have never been able to use Linux at first either. So I appreciate everything that they have done. It's just, like you, I don't appreciate the path that they're going down. And, you know, I just...
Yeah, I probably, at one time, you know, as an Ubuntu user and doing a podcast, I probably praised PPAs at one point, but that's just an example of the non-integratedness of Ubuntu compared to Debian. And one of the things I appreciate about Debian is how it's mature, it's polished, it's integrated, it's, you know, people used to say Ubuntu was Debian done right. Like, I think Ubuntu's Debian done wrong. I mean, it's in some ways. I mean, it's there's a reason people base their newfangled distro on Debian. It's because it's stable. It's good. It's predictable. There's something there for everybody. I mean, the way they break up, you know, their distros, it just makes sense. It's not confusing once you wrap your head around it. But, you know, you compare that to, you know, it's always bothered me. And this is really nothing to be bothered about. But for some reason, it always has. The fact that, you know, Ubuntu makes a distinction for marketing purposes only, I think. But Kubuntu, Lubuntu, Zubuntu, Ubuntu, that doesn't make sense to me. Yeah. I mean, to me, Linux is an ideal Linux install for me is a net install, a base install, and then from that point on, I make it what I want.
Yeah.
I put on it what I want to. OpenBox with my root menu on it.
Right.
Just what I want on it.
Right.
And nobody can outdo that. I don't think.
No,
because
you're right.
I like my ice cream my way. To continue the ice cream metaphor.
And plus, kind of going on the coattails of what you're saying, like, once you wrap your head around the Debian thing, like, you know, because some people say, oh, well, I want to use distribution X because it's stable, or I want to use distribution Y because it's bleeding edge or whatever. You have all of that with Debian. If you want wicked stable, use Lenny right now. Use the stable release. If you want the bleeding edge, then, you know, install SID on your computer. You're good to go. So, or if you want, you know,
if you want
everyone else considers stable,
minimal.
Just use testing. Yeah, exactly. If you want to build it from scratch, get the net installer. If you want a full-blown installation, grab the DVD. Grab the business card installer. There's, like, so many variations. It's you know, like you said, you kind of have to wrap your head around it. But once you do, you're like, wow, I can do whatever I want.
But one of the biggest positive outcomes, I think, of owning is as many computers as I do, or having as many computers as I do in my house, and then moving them all from Ubuntu to Debian. One of the biggest positives that comes out of that is day-to-day maintenance, you know, the daily updates. It's a whole lot less work.
Mm.
And I don't know if I can describe why, but I think it's the longevity of it. I know that each one of these installs I'm never going to have to reinstall it, ever, you know. And I, in the past, I've gotten really confused unnecessarily about the differences between aptitude and apt-get, and whatever the differences are. And I guess in some ways it's to each his own. There's reasons to use both, but I use aptitude across the board, and just using that on every machine versus having to, okay, Ubuntu recommends using apt-get, not aptitude, and some of their programs use apt-get and some use aptitude if you use a graphical front end. I don't know. And I may be not making any sense with that. And it's sort of hard for me to describe, but since switching, it's easier for me to maintain 9 or 10 computers all running Debian than it is all running the latest Ubuntu.
Yeah.
And I don't exactly know why or how to describe that, but it just is. It's noticeably easier for me.
Yeah.
Less work involved or something.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know what kind of Q&A Ubuntu does in their packages, but I know Debian definitely runs them through the ringer before they send them down to you, so.
Yeah, I got real excited today because on my SID machine, I was doing an update, and I noticed a whole bunch of KDE stuff come in. And I know they froze KDE at 4.45 or 4.4 or something a while back because, if, you know, once it's in SID, if it hangs around SID with no major problems for 10 days, it automatically
gets pushed down.
Yeah, but since testing is frozen, they're not introducing the new KDE 4.5 into SID yet.
Okay.
And I saw I saw a whole bunch of KDE stuff come in today. I'm thinking, oh man, that means in 10 days or so, you know, Stable's going to be released. But I got to look, and I still get confused sometimes with the way Debian names the version numbers.
Yeah.
I think it said version 4.4.4.5-5.
Oh,
is,
man.
Is that 4.5? And I honestly couldn't tell. I went to the KDE maintainers page for Debian. I still couldn't tell. So I booted into KDE to see if it had the tiling window manager function that I wanted to try out, and it didn't. It's still version 4.4. So it'll be at least another 10 days before Stable's out. But
well, I know they're saying before the end of the year. That's what they're really pushing for. So, and I downloaded the latest net installer, and it's labeled as the beta net installer. So that's got to be a good sign.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It honestly is. I'm amazed every time. And to me, the benchmark is taking a stable machine, you know, and upgrading it. It's what was it, Easter last year when Stable came out?
Yeah, February or something. It was around Valentine's Day, I think.
Yeah, it was Easter the year before that. Valentine's Day was the last one. That's weird that there was two holidays in a row, so it makes you wonder if this would be Christmas.
Yeah.
I think the Stable before last was Easter, and the last Stable was Valentine's Day.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Maybe there's a pattern there.
Yeah, and that was one thing that I learned too doing the interviews. I thought that was really cool. I didn't really know exactly how the unstable and testing branch work, but like you were saying, once something becomes what they consider, you know, ready to be moved out of stable after 10 days, it kind of trickles down into testing. So stuff trickles out of unstable into testing. I was like, oh, that's really cool, because I thought they just worked on testing. Freeze it and then, you know, move it down and then freeze SID, move that down to testing. I didn't know stuff actually trickled out. So I was like, oh, that's really cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, everything just sort of, I mean, I only know this from a user perspective. I'm not a developer by any stretch of the imagination or a package maintainer or anything like that. But it my impression is it's all fluid until they've frozen testing.
Yeah.
And then everything just sort of goes on hold for a little while, and they smash bugs, and they release when it's ready.
Yeah.
And it's a thing of beauty.
Yeah. You know, your computer is proof of that going on its fifth upgrade soon, and, you know, I'm sure it's going to be flawless once again. And
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. That's another reason I like Aptitude is, you know, it'll tell you when you've got problems, when you're not cleanly uninstalled something, or, you know, it's your Debian system can feel very, very clean if it's maintained right, and it's not hard to do.
Yeah, you said before too on one of your podcasts how if you're gonna go with one or the other, you need to like stick with one or the other. You shouldn't like bounce back and forth between Aptitude or apt-get. So you've switched all the way over to Aptitude, and in your experience, do the upgrades go better using Aptitude than doing it when you used to use apt-get?
I think I've always used Aptitude with Debian machines updating.
Oh, okay.
I think. Now, I still maintain one Ubuntu machine, and that's at church. And I put Ubuntu on there two long-term services ago, and I upgraded this last long-term support release, or whatever they call it.
Yeah.
And I think the main reason I did it was just because I was introducing Linux into a sound room at church full of Windows users.
Right, right.
And I don't know why I did it, to tell you the truth. I wish it was a Debian, because it is a server. It's an ISCAST server, and it records audio and the web server. And I really wish it was Debian. I may switch it over to Debian, but that's the only machine I use apt-get on.
Okay. They won't even notice anyway, so.
No, they won't. They won't. Because I thought about switching KDE on that machine just for something new, but that would confuse them too. Most of them stay away from it. That's sort of like my computer, just because nobody sits in front of it.
Oh, okay. Well, Dave, I don't know if this is a good place to enter, not talking about newest Debian coming up, but is there anything else you wanted to go over, or anything we didn't get to talk about you want to mention, or?
I don't reckon, Jonathan. I think you're doing great work here. I wish I'd have thought of a This Week in Debian podcast. I think it's brilliant. All your shows are great. It's you're just an example of somebody that's not afraid to get out there. And I know somebody mentioned to me 2 or 3 years ago that they knew Ben Hutchinson, or is it Hutchinson?
Yeah,
or Hutchinson,
yeah,
the guy?
Yep.
Yeah, they told me, you know, I can get you an interview with him. It's like, oh, I don't know, you know, that sounds sort of scary. I mean, just because of who he was. But so I know I turned down one of those a long time ago because I was afraid for whatever reason. I don't know. It was silly, but you do great work. I enjoy your stuff, and I thank you for. I think I've already said it once. I question your logic of having me on here, but
people are gonna love that.
Well, I'm a Debian user, and one day when my girls grow up and move out of the house, I'm gonna get a Debian tattoo. And I'm serious. If I get a tattoo one day, that's gonna be it. The Debian swirl.
There you go. And then make sure you put it like on your back or your legs, oh, yeah, or your legs or something, so your daughters want to see it. Well, actually, you live in South Carolina, so I'm sure you must wear shorts at some point. So.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So you have to put on your arm or your back or something so that we can hide it.
Once they're grown up and out of the house, I just tell them, you know, if you want to complain about it, you know, you shouldn't have moved out. I don't know what I'm gonna do. They're not grown yet, and it's scary.
Well, Dave, we thank you for your podcast, A Lot of Linux Links. Go to lotoflinuxlinks.com. Listen to Dave Yates, and he's also. His podcast is only in AUG because he does not hate freedom.
But it's actually in Speaks, too, thanks to me being a not Klaatu, a Klaatu fanboy.
Oh, there you go. So, yeah. if you have an AUG player or you don't mind listening to your computer, the podcast on your computer, then highly recommend listening to Dave's podcast. And that must have been quite the move doing that. You must have got quite the backlash from dropping your MP3 feed and strictly going AUG.
Yeah, I got some backlash. I think to a lot of people that it actually appeared that I was trying to get rid of my audience, because I think at the time at least half my audience was MP3. Mm. And as soon as I made the switch to AUG, I think I got really, really busy with, I don't know, Southeast Linux Fest or something. But I didn't do a podcast for like 3 months after that.
Yeah.
So it probably seemed like I didn't really care if people could get my podcast at all, much less in the medium of their choice. But I'm still doing the podcast, and there was something liberating about removing my feed from iTunes and about doing AUG only, so to speak. I'm glad I did it. It's not a big deal to me.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I mean, because I figured, you know, the people I was talking to were Linux users anyway.
Right.
And, you know, I'm too old to care if a new person uses Linux or that I introduce them to, which also sounds odd if you do a Linux Fest and don't think of yourself as an evangelist. But I'm about the community. Mm. Not necessarily not all about people outside of it introducing them.
On the inside,
if they're welcome. Yeah. Well, everybody's welcome to use Linux.
Right.
And yeah, I just don't want you changing it a whole lot.
Oh, and that, speaking of that, though, I didn't mention that either. Dave is also the I don't know if you'd say creator or maintainer or the lead person of the Southeast Linux Fest.
One of many.
Yeah. So, but yeah, go to.
It's not a one-person job, but yeah.
Yeah, go to southeastlinuxfest.org, check that out. This year, it's going to be 2011. It's going to be June 13th, is that right?
I think it's 10th, 11th, and 12th.
Okay,
I
knew it was somewhere around
there. This is the third one, so I think we know what we're supposed to be doing now.
Are you going to have it in the same place you had it last year?
Yeah, it's in Spartanburg.
Spartanburg, South Carolina.
Spartanburg Marriott,
okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, so June 10th, 11th, and 12th. Go to southeastlandisfest.org. Hey, when are we going to have those videos?
Oh, soon I hope.
Soon I hope. Just figured I'd put some pressure on you.
Yeah, well, soon. Soon-ish.
That's the Debian way. You'll have it when it's ready.
That's right. That's what I was trying to say.
All right, Dave. I appreciate your time, and thanks for doing the interview. I had a great time.
Hey, yes, sir. You keep up the good work, John.
Yeah, I'm going to try.
All right.
All right, we'll talk to you later.
Okay, good talking to you.
All right, see ya.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to This Week in Debian. If you know someone or you yourself are in the Debian community, please get a hold of us. We can interview you. If you'd like to get a hold of us, our email address is feedback@frostbitemedia.org. Again, that email address is feedback@frostbitemedia.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.